The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
The Gathering. The supernatural world can be a dark, intimidating, and scary place. We gather to shine light on the mysterious and misunderstood aspects of the paranormal world. We bring to the table years of experience as mediums, healing channels, and paranormal investigators.
We share true stories from our experiences to dispel fear where we can and help you discover the amazing layers that make up the paranormal world. You are invited to gather around the metaphysical table with us and discuss the worlds of the unseen on The Gathering Radio Show.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to The Gathering Radio Show. This is Stephanie.
And this is Heidi, and we're here live on the Para-X Network here tonight on this wonderful Tuesday.
Yes, in December. Tuesday of December already.
I know, right? Down the weeks to the end of the year.
I know. And we have so many good shows coming up. We're just all excited.
I know, right? We actually, this will be a fun show tonight, too. Well, we say that about every show. We love every show we do. But it's a fun topic. We haven't done this topic before, so I think it'll be fun.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's going to be a fun topic. And we just found loads. You know, we did some research on it and found loads of information. So I think it'll be awesome and fun. And hopefully we'll tell you guys some stuff that'll make you go, oh, really?
Exactly.
You just never know.
Exactly. What have you been up to?
Yeah, so how's everything? So I had this mishap with my Christmas tree yesterday.
Do tell.
We have a real tree, you know, and I told you last week we got this really big one, really tall one. Brought it in the house, put it up on Sunday and let it unfold. And then yesterday I was putting lights on and my foot, all of a sudden I could feel water and I'm like, what's going on? You know, and I looked down and there was like water everywhere, right? No. The tree stand is one of those big plastic green ones, right? And it was outside, it was in the garage because when I put my trees out after Christmas, I leave them on the deck. I leave them strung up with lights and then I just leave them lit up, you know, for a month or so. And I don't know if the water cracked it. I've never had this happen before because I do this every year. But there was a crack, you know, I discovered this because my floor was drenched, you know, and I had a bag, a plastic bag underneath it, not even able to contain it. And so I had to run to Menards, you know, and get this new tree stand. But, oh, my God, I went through, I don't know, a million towels. There was water all over my hardwood floor.
Oh, dear.
So, yeah, it's a beautiful tree. It's a gorgeous tree. We got it in the new stand, and it's got all the lights on it. We haven't had a chance to formally decorate it yet, though, so we're hoping tomorrow, when Casey gets home from work, we'll be able to decorate it. But, goodness.
Christmas emergency.
I know, right? But it's fun. How about you? Did you get a tree?
We did get a tree. It is not real this year because I am the one that had to go last year and whatever to get under the tree, get pine needles all in my hair. I loved having a real tree. I love the smell, but I do love having a artificial tree. And, you know, it makes me kind of sad that these trees get cut down for us to have enjoyment for a few weeks or whatever. And I'm not knocking anyone that does it.
No.
No worries there. But it just makes me kind of sad because I have these lovely little pine trees in the yard that are just so cute. And I'm like, I can't imagine cutting you down to bring you inside for a month and then that's it. So I'd rather decorate the trees outside. And so I'm trying to find a way to do that and not spend $1 billion on lights. But so decorate the outside little pine trees and then did get an artificial one for inside because I like the low maintenance and can use it for a long time.
I hear you. I 1 year I decided that I couldn't stand the thought either of cutting down a tree for Christmas. I mean, that's been a problem with me because, you know, I love trees.
Yeah.
But So we bought this artificial tree, and I really felt like Christmas was ruined that year. None of us liked it. I promptly gave it away. And from then on, we've had, you know, Christmas trees, real ones. But, you know, we always pick the ones that maybe no one else will pick, you know, because I would never go to a tree farm and cut one for sure, you know. But we always get, you know, ones that are a little bit misshapen, or the Charlie Brown trees that, you know, that have been left, right, you know. So that's kind of my take on it. You know, we just we buy the ones maybe somebody else would overlook, you know, because this one this year is a little bit different shape too, but it's beautiful. It's a beautiful tree. So mm-hmm. And I got my wish to have a really tall, big one. So it's awesome. It's good. Awesome.
Yeah. I know in the chat room, Sherry said I would decorate an outside tree. Well, I am going to decorate an outside tree as well.
Yes.
I just got to get out there and do it and find enough lights to do it. Because I brought some lights out, let's see, a couple of days ago to decorate one of them. And I was I severely underestimated how many tree lights I would need for the tree. And it wasn't a very big tree. So I'm like, oh my goodness. I mean, it was probably 9 feet tall, but it's huge around. And even the smallest one I could find, I was like, I can't decorate this tree with this amount of lights. So I had to pack everything up and bring it in. I'm like, okay. Plan B. I don't know what that's going to look like.
I know. Yeah. And I want to decorate our evergreen in the front yard. And I found a whole bunch of lights, but probably not enough. And then I've been going to different places like Menards and Walmart. Nobody has lights this year. Like everything else, they're in short supply of everything.
Yeah.
My sister found a couple of boxes and at her house that she had extra. And then she called me today. She was up at the lake. And she stopped at Walmart. She said, "Steph, they have 3 boxes of multicolored green wired lights. Do you want me to get them for you?" And I said, "Yes." So I might have enough lights now. I hope so. I'm hoping to light that up this weekend too. So, yeah.
Well, I was thinking of when I set up the lights on the outside is to do some little beacon for like an alien craft too.
Oh.
Or do, you know, if I could put some kind of maybe crop circle type, you know, design in the yard out of lights that hopefully means like land here or something. I don't know. I'm still thinking about how to do that because we have this point that's just open. And I'm like, gosh, could I put something there that gets like land here? It's, you know, we'd like to meet you.
Mm-hmm.
You come in peace or please come in peace. Like, I don't know. I'm still trying to figure that one out. But
yeah
I'd like to do that as well. If I'm going to stick some lights out there, I'd like to have some action as well.
Yeah.
And hopefully the neighbors are on board with this.
Yeah. It'll be fun.
We'll see how that works out.
We'll get it together. I'll get the tree, you know, decorated tomorrow. Maybe we'll get the one outside all lit up this weekend and it'll be all awesome. Awesome sauce. So Heidi, what are we going to talk about tonight?
So this topic came up a few weeks ago. I believe it was a few weeks ago from a listener in the chat room. We had been talking, it was probably on a paranormal smorgasbord or something, and we were talking about the Great Lakes and paranormal Great Lakes, you know, and so that was part of a show. It wasn't a full show, so we said we should do a full show around this. So I'm thinking what was it, a paranormal smorgasbord, I think. And so we said we should do a whole show on this. So we decided to do a Great Lakes paranormal show, and that's what we're going to do tonight is we're going to talk about the Great Lakes because we here in Minnesota are on Lake Superior. Now, we are not on Lake Superior. We're down in the metro area, but Minnesota is connected to one of the Great Lakes. So we have this affinity for it. And we do visit.
Yeah.
We visit her quite a bit. And, you know, we have more than just that lake as well. There's 5 Great Lakes. And so we wanted to talk about some of the hauntings and spooky stories and mythical creatures, or maybe not mythical creatures, that we've heard about or read about with the Great Lakes. So if anybody also has stories, I'll put this out here early, because if you have any stories about any personal experiences with the Great Lakes, we'd love to hear them as well. So jump in the chat room, let us know, and we'll share it on air. But get to type in, because if you've been on any of the Great Lakes, you probably have some kind of story.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, and I think we should start out with Lake Superior just because it's about the proximity to Minnesota and because we know it well.
Mm-hmm.
And first of all, you know, I should say that there's been many, many boats that have went down on Lake Superior. Lots of lives lost. You know, we've talked about Lake Superior actually being a spirit, and she rails every once in a while, which she does. You know, on Gordon Lightfoot's song, you know, he talks about she sings in her ice water mansion, which I kind of believe that too. And, you know, the First Nations people called her Gitchigumi, which Gitchi means big, Gumi means lake. So huge lake. And one of the, still talking about First Nations people, the Ojibwe people also talked about this water creature in Lake Superior, and they called it Mishapeshu. And listen to the description of this one. They have said that he has, or she has, the head and paws of an enormous cat, the horns of a bison, the scaly body of a snake, and the spiky back and tail. It says that Mishapeshu is said to speak in a roaring hiss that emulates the sound of rushing water. It dates back to the prehistoric American Southeast. So Southeast, that's interesting. That's would be like Florida, right? Southeast.
I would guess so.
It also says that she dwells in the depths of Lake Superior near Mishapatan Island, and often considered a malevolent being. Her most cherished pastimes are guarding large quantities of copper on the island, bringing death and misfortune, and occasionally causing storms. And you can view photographs of her on Agua Rock in Lake Superior Provincial Park. And I will post this. I will post this link on our chat. I'm gonna check it out first, but I will post it as I check it out on the chat.
Yeah, it's an interesting photo. I have the same photo up here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very, very interesting. Some of the creatures that are said to be sighted, you know, in the lake or around the lake area. And I have to say, I want to go through a little bit of fact around the lakes. Like, just, I was looking up depth because I thought, how deep are these lakes, right? Mm-hmm. And of course, Lake Superior is the biggest of the five. It looks like Lake Ontario is the smallest. Don't quote me on that. I'm just looking at a graph here, but Lake Superior gets, it goes, the maximum depth is 1,332 feet. Like, seriously?
Yeah, I mean, that's deep.
Well, that's a quarter mile. Isn't that a quarter mile?
Mm-hmm.
Something like that, right?
Craziness.
Look it up. Anyway, someone will look it up, I'm sure. But a quarter mile deep. So anything could be living down there. I mean, it's huge. It's, let's see here. How average depth volume it has, or water areas, 31,700 square miles, and with shoreline length of 2,726 miles, and then a quarter mile deep in areas, not the whole thing, of course, but that can hold a lot of what? Well, obviously a lot of boats, a lot of ships have sank there. But a lot of creatures too,
yeah.
Right?
Oh yeah.
They were saying, that in the past 300 years, 10,000 ships have perished on the lake with 30,000 crew going down.
Yeah.
In those boats. That's a lot of people and boats, and not, most of them haven't been recovered is what I'm reading. I've read doing some of this research. So another reason I will not go swimming in Lake Superior as well. Basically, it's a sacrificial well. I don't know, sacrificial lake.
Well,
not intentional, but seriously, 30,000 bodies in there?
30,000 bodies. And because it's so deep.
In a lake. No, thank you.
And it's so deep and it's so cold that those bodies are well preserved, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, we've heard so many, you know, in my lifetime, I've seen news story after news story about these bodies that are discovered that are centuries old that look like they died yesterday, which you know, was kind of the basis of the book Daughters of the Lake by Wendy Webb. So yeah, it's crazy. There's a lot of bodies floating around down there. And you know, you wonder, so the Edmund Fitzgerald went down. That's probably the most well-known.
That was the last one that went down, they said.
Yeah. And you know, I was reading, I was reading about the Edmund Fitzgerald, and wow, that was kind of a, they say it was kind of the most luxurious iron ore boat of all. I mean, it had like really cool tiled bathrooms, and I mean, it was very luxurious. But yeah, so it went down, you know, and there was 29 lives lost, and wow, and it was the gales of November, right? And they say, mm-hmm. you know, it was just right outside Whitefish Bay, but you know, there's been a lot of boats shipwrecks in Whitefish Bay too. So even if it would have made Whitefish Bay, we wonder if it would have survived anyway. I doubt it. You know, they said it split in half, just like the Titanic, you know, yeah. because the winds were so strong. And they say they also talked about, one of the things they talked about, because I was really researching that because it's fascinating, right? Mm-hmm. It's something that happened in our lifetime. And I just remember hearing about it in school. And then of course, there was the song by Gordon Lightfoot that really detailed the whole sinking. And, you know, they talked about how this boat was split in half. They talk about how it was like gale force winds. It was almost like a tsunami. But they also talk about these waves on Lake Superior that are called sister waves. And they come in threes. So there's one that comes and it's like twice the size of a normal wave. And it'll swamp a boat. And, you know, have a tremendous amount of water on deck. And then another one will come right after it. So there's no time for that water to drain before this one hits. And then a third one comes. So effectively, these boats have no chance, right? Mm-hmm. Once these sister waves come, boom, it's gone. Because there's no way they can get out of them. It's quite amazing. Sister waves. They call them rogue sister waves of Lake Superior. You know, just another spirit, supernatural thing that the lake is unhappy, and so she's going to swamp these boats. I don't know. It's kind of cool, right? It's very interesting.
Well, not cool, but interesting. Well, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you know, you think of how big these lakes are and mm-hmm. how much weather they can actually create. You know, and I can only imagine trying to navigate something that, you know, when you have tough conditions anyway, just let's say the weather is just tough anyway. And then the lakes get involved and create their own, because yeah. as I've been reading, it's like they do kind of create their own weather. So now you're navigating something that really isn't going on anywhere else. And so you have to just hope and know what you're doing, you know, be a seasoned, ship person, captain and whatnot, and then be able to get to wherever you're going with this boat that, like an ore boat is, you know,
yeah,
so heavy with all this, you know,
sure,
ore and whatever else it's carrying. And then, you know, if it's heavy anyway, because of all the stuff in it. And I mean, I just can't imagine trying to navigate something like that. I don't think I could do that kind of job. Let's put it that way. And then who knows what is below the water, you know, I mean, right. It's bad enough just to have these rocks and whatever that you can't see.
Yes.
And that, you know, I mean, people have mapped it out, but still, if you can't see where you're going and the winds, and like you said, these big waves coming up mm-hmm. and you have no chance, you know, by the time one is hitting you, the other one's right on its tail. It's like, I don't know how the boats get through anyway. That's just, unless the weather is perfect.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. It
takes a lot of guts, I think, you know.
I would imagine. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's just like, I always think of the Vikings too, setting out in their, you know, those boats, the long boats over the seas, over the big Atlantic Ocean. I mean, how did they do it? Wouldn't you be scared? I would be scared in one of those kind of boats.
Terrified.
Yeah.
Yeah. I couldn't do it.
Sure.
And we're talking about the Great Lakes and having who knows what out there. And mm-hmm. can you imagine being on the ocean then? No.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things I came across too is, you know, it said that there are over 6,000 sunken ships at the bottom of the Great Lakes, right? So that's all of them, not just Lake Superior, but all of them. And one of the things they talked about, this article that I read was photojournalists were, you know, they were investigating all of these and TV shows. And they show these pictures that they, of course, have made themselves, so they're not true pictures, but they talk about how these divers have gone to the bottom of the lakes to look at these shipwrecks and seen ghosts, you know, in the shipwrecks. You know, like this one, this diver described watching a crewman faithfully going about his duties, but upon the driver's unexpected arrival, he stopped and stared deeply into his eyes, sunken eye holes swirling black. Okay, that's pretty wild. And it just, it talks about this time and time again. And then there's another one that talks about casually. Okay, so Lake Superior claimed 12 lives on this terrible storm in 1947. And one wreck diver reported swimming into a cabin to find the ghost of a crewman casually lying back in his bunk. Okay. That would be wild, right? And it was...
I wonder, though, was it a ghost or was it actually a body? Because they're so well-preserved, right?
Right, right. So especially
maybe
in Superior.
He thought it was a ghost and especially really it was Superior. Still the body.
Mm-hmm. And that was in a steamer. That was an enormous ore steamer called the Emperor, which sank in 1947. This other one, though, with this eyeballs, you know, this ghost looking at him... I mean, that's pretty well. That would have been a little bit scary, a little bit hard to take, I think.
Let's see here. Kat is saying that she, that's right. I think Kat lives in Michigan. She said, I'm glad I live further inland. I think maybe the smaller lakes will do for me. not a fan of Lake Superior. I get it.
Yeah. Karen's reading the bacteria work on bodies and makes them float, except in Lake Superior, right?
Because it's so cold.
It's too cold.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So they sink.
It's like a freezer. Yeah.
Which preserves them even more because it's colder.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Down. Absolutely. So there's that aspect. But then, you know, we touched on this a little bit on our paranormal smorgasbord that one time. But this is a new one. So apparently Lake Huron has a lost civilization that's 9,000 years old. They're talking about in the depths of a lake, they found what was once a land bridge. And researchers have identified human-made formations that may have been used for hunting caribou. The structures were astonishingly well preserved due to the relative calmness of Lake Huron and their offshore location. They say that this land bridge connects, I believe it's Michigan with Ontario at an angle. So it's kind of like up by that bridge up there. I mean, fascinating stuff, right? Why haven't we heard about this before? I've never heard about that. That's
I would imagine maybe people around there know mm-hmm. about it, but if you know, further away you get, it's not national news. So right. It's not part of history because, you know, there's so much history that people are never going to know because there's only so much you can teach.
Yes.
One person in school and then that's it. Right.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Interesting. Very cool.
But then they talk about Lake Michigan's triangle, you know, and how many, you know, things have went down. It's kind of like the Bermuda Triangle.
Mm-hmm.
And the occurrences date back as early as 1881 when the boat Thomas Hume vanished without a trace. And then it says in 1921, the Rosa Belle was found floating upside down, emptied of its passengers. It was thought that there must have been a collision, though no ships nearby ever reported any incidents. A myriad of culprits have been blamed for the mysterious events, ranging from UFOs to time travel portals to weather. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, very cool. Some lighthouses on the lakes that are supposed to be haunted. And so I started looking up just hauntings in the Great Lakes area. And, of course, lighthouses came up. And a couple of them here I'll read before we go to break. Big Bay Point Lighthouse. Hey, Kat, this is up in Michigan, Marquette, Michigan. Big Bay Point Lighthouse guides ships past the rugged coastline of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Its first keeper, H. William Pryor, appointed his teenage son George as his assistant Tragedy struck 15 months later when George fell down the stairs and slashed his leg open to the bone. Yuck.
Mm-hmm.
He would later succumb to his injuries, probably from, why in the world did that word just escape me? Bacteria, right? Mm-hmm. And so he died, and then William became depressed and disappeared in the woods, and he wasn't found for 18 months, and he had hung himself apparently right away because he was a skeleton by the time they found him. And those who stayed at the lighthouse after his death reported cabinets slamming and seeing a spirit walking the grounds in the in Pryor's U.S. Life Saving Service uniform. So they saw him in his uniform walking around after he had passed away.
Mm-hmm.
Sad, very sad. Yeah. There's another Michigan one for you, Kat. Whitefish Point Lighthouse, located at the very end of Whitefish Point. All ships entering and leaving Lake Superior have to pass by this lighthouse. Not only does Whitefish Point serve as the entry and exit point to the largest of the Great Lakes, but it is also located on a treacherous coastline that has claimed nearly 200 ships and as many as 100 lives. The souls of these sailors are said to be in limbo, taking up residence in the lighthouse. Those who stay at the lighthouse have reported doors opening on their own and a sensation of being gently touched or items mysteriously moving in the lighthouse.
Crazy. Mm.
That would be cool to investigate.
It would be. It would be. I think, you know, I did read about that Whitefish Point Lighthouse, and there have been there is a team out there that does a lot of investigations, apparently. You know,
very cool.
And they talk about it, yeah. So, you know, and then I saw a whole news story on, it must have been a Duluth station, because it was must have been right before Halloween at some point. I don't know if it was last year or the year before, and they talked about, you know, the that boat that's in the harbor there, the William Irving.
Yeah.
And how that's so haunted, but yet only one person died on there. But they think that it's kind of like a, because Lake Superior has so many ghosts that it's mm-hmm. kind of like they just walk right in there, you know, and yeah. just take up their residence.
Well, if you think about people who were crews on boats, they would feel comfortable somewhere like that. You
right.
know? So if they died and their boat is still down in the ocean and they are up, you know, in a boat that's sitting above water, I think that might feel more comfortable to them, even though that's not their boat. But mm-hmm. why wouldn't it be a beacon to draw in wayward sailors who lost their lives on the lake, you know, as a home?
Yes.
Because, I mean, have you walked through it? Have you been through it?
No.
Okay. It's haunted. Like, it is. Mm-hmm. And I know that it hasn't seen a lot of death, but it's still haunted. There mm-hmm. is still activity in it. And I went through it. I've been through it a few times. And it is very active. It is very haunted.
Yeah.
So, if anybody has a chance to get up there once we are out of the lockdown and all this stuff here from COVID, take a walk through it if you get to Duluth, because it's an amazing boat. It's huge. It's awesome. And it's weird because it looks big from the outside, and you go inside and it feels even bigger, especially mm-hmm. when you get into the where they kept the ore, you know, the big, I don't know what they're, the holds,
yeah,
you know, whatever they call them.
Yep.
Yeah, that is like you're in a movie theater and you're like, how am I in a boat right now? It's so big. And then you think, this doesn't look like it should be that big from the outside. I know some of it's below water, but it's weird. It's kind of trippy, you know, that it kind of messes with your, you know, your senses a little bit. But mm-hmm. I think the metal too, you know, of how these boats are made probably conduct a lot of electricity or a lot of energy and can hold a lot of energy. So, you know, I can't imagine what might be drawn to something like that. And just the emotions of the people that were on the boat, especially navigating storms over the years, you know, all those emotions and the energy that's locked into that boat. I mean, I would imagine that would draw in a lot of spirit activity.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, we've always talked about water being, well, water is alive, and it's a very good conduit of paranormal activity, just like all kinds of other activities. So, and Lake Superior being so crazy and wild herself, you know, is just a good conduit just in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
They're talking about lighthouses, and lighthouses are to warn, from what I understand, from maritime, from being out with captains on the sea, is that that's what they would look for so that they could know where they were, but that's land, right? So you don't want to go anywhere near it. So it warns ships off for sure. From rocks and shoals and stuff like that can't be seen, especially at night. And but Karin's saying they can be beacons for the spirits. Well, sure, because they're Sherry's wondering.
It's supposed to be safety. You know, I mean, obviously, if a lighthouse when you're in the boat is saying, "Hey, watch out for the rocks here, and watch out. This is, you know, they're land markers, so you don't want to go towards them." But if you're struggling, you know, or you're out of the boat or your spirit now, you want to go to it, right?
Sure. Yes, absolutely.
I would think at that point is a beacon of safety. So,
I agree. Well, we are at the half hour, so I think it's time for our commercial break. So we will be back in 2 minutes. This is the Gathering Radio Show on the Para-X Radio Network.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X. For a truly unique podcast experience, we have you covered. Spirit Bayou with CJ Dunham airs live from the Third Coast in Southeast Texas on Tuesday and Fridays at midnight Eastern Time, covering Creole folklore and folk magic to strange paranormal activity to new equipment for the field. CJ Dunham is a Catholic swamp witch, a devotee to our Mother Mary in the Trinity, a true believer in our Lord, the Holy Ghost, and Christ. Peace be with your spirit and the spirits by you. Para-X Radio.
Hi, I'm Kimberly Juarez with Cat Paranormal of Minnesota.
Hi, I'm Willow Lehman Shunt, psychic medium, Dark NOLA Paranormal, New Orleans.
And I'm Jerry Ayers with Supernatural Investigators of Minnesota. And together, we are The Calling. Every Wednesday night, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time and 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, only on ParaXRadioNetwork.com.
Welcome back to the Gathering Radio Show on the Para-X Radio Network, and we're talking about the Great Lakes tonight and some spooky stories, hauntings, and mythical beasts that live in the lake. We're talking about all sorts of cool stuff here. And one of the questions in the chat room, Sherry had asked about Viking wrecks in the Great Lakes. Are there any Viking wrecks? And I haven't found anything.
Mm-mm.
I would assume if Vikings were here, they wrecked in the Great Lakes, because I don't know how anybody could be off the hook when it comes to wrecking in the Great Lakes. It seems like that the lakes are not discriminating. They will wreck any boat that they can, you know, if the circumstances and weather are right. So, but I would imagine if they were, you know, Vikings were here a long time ago, and how would we, I mean, I doubt anything would still be around, you know?
Yeah.
Because boats were made of wood.
Yes.
You know, so
yes.
How would there still be? But I guess with the preservation, I don't know, maybe they're just really far down or they've been covered up, all the different debris that covers up boats. And
well, because the Vikings were, you know, and from like 900 AD until like, you know, 1100, I think that was, it was like a 100 or 200 year reign. And they were here in Minnesota. I mean, there's the runestone, you know, that they found, and we know that they've been here, and we found, they found evidence of longhouses and stuff. But so, yeah, you would imagine. But because there's that much time, that's a whole, that's like 1,000 years, you know? I don't know that there'd be anything left. Interesting.
Right. But, you know, if a body can be preserved,
yes,
you would think a boat could. But here's the deal. With all the shipwrecks that have gone down, and we either know where they are or we have an idea where they are, and we still can't go get them because of the depth or the conditions or, you know, just how do you get it out of there? Here's Vikings, you know, ships that are probably down there and might be preserved, but we don't even know that they're down there, where they would be. How would you find them? So I think it would, you know, just be some kind of luck if someone stumbled across one that hasn't been covered up over time or fallen apart or whatever. So I would imagine that there's Viking wrecks down there. I just like,
who knows? Find them? We haven't heard, you know, and there might be something out there, but just a quick view. I couldn't find anything, you know, I will. It's interesting though. So, you know what, I'm going to continue to kind of research this. And if I find anything, I'll report back on one of our future episodes, because that's cool. I mean, you know, it's a cool idea, but, and who knows, maybe a body will come up that's a well-preserved Viking from 1,000 years ago in Lake Superior.
That would be interesting, you know,
wouldn't it?
It'd be cool. Someone would have to get him right away, because he'd start to fall apart as soon as he came up.
Oh, absolutely. But yeah, what a cool thing. I love it.
Interesting. You know, there's got to be, if there's going to be sea creatures, or not sea creatures, but lake creatures, there's got to be mermaid for you stuff.
Yes. Oh, yes. I believe there's mermaids up there. Absolutely. Well, you know, Alan talked to us about mermaids up in Rainy Lake, which is connected through different water sources to the Great Lakes. So, yeah, and the Great Lakes are connected to the ocean. So it's very possible that there's mermaids in there. Chilly, though, for mermaids, right? I mean, I guess I don't know, but that's what I
wouldn't know. I would have no idea what mermaid temperature, like what water temperature they need.
I don't know.
But, yeah, I would imagine they can hang out in some pretty cold waters and be just fine.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Jerry just shared a Wikipedia post of all shipwrecks on the Great Lakes, and wow, are there a lot of them. So it really goes down and lists all the ones that we know of. Sad. And I wonder if there's still bodies. I don't know. Do they ever go down and get them? I know they didn't with the Edmund Fitzgerald, because it's like, you know, all of the ships that Pearl Harbor, which just happened yesterday, right? We did a Pearl Harbor Remembrance Day. All those ships are still just, the bodies are entombed within the ships down in Hawaii. So I'm not sure if they just let them all, you know, stay down at the bottoms too here. I don't know. Yeah. You know, one of the things I did hear about is this ship called the Bannockburn. It just went missing, right? So they don't know that it sank. It just went missing. I was watching a video of a woman talking about it from Duluth, and she's like a historian of the Great Lakes, and can't remember exactly what she said, but it just went missing. And then every once in a while, people report seeing it as a ghostly ship up there. So it's like it disappeared, and now it's back as a ship.
When did it disappear?
In 1902. And it was a steel-hulled freighter that went out, never came back, never, you know, nothing was known. Did they have radios? I mean, did they have radios back? I don't even know. What did they have back then?
I think so. I think they did have radios back then.
Because some even these other ones. Well, yeah, because even these other ones that went out early like that sank, they have, you know, records of. But this one, they have no idea what happened to it. And this woman is a historian, and she's written books about the Great Lakes. And she was saying that there have been many people that report seeing this ghost ship, and that at some point near Grand Portage, right after it sunk, or like a year or two later, an oar washed up on shore that was bloody, and it had the name of the ship, Bannockburn, you know, engraved on it. Oh, who knows if that's true or not? That's the myth. But interesting stuff. So yeah, so people see it as a ghost ship of some kind. So
wow,
it's kind of spooky, actually.
Wow, that's kind of interesting when they just disappear like that.
Yeah,
You know, especially if there's no weather.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because you'd think weather. Although I have been reading too, because there's boats are running into each other as well. They said in this one article in MidwestWeekend.com that as dangerous as storms could be, collisions sunk more boats. And let's see here, a wooden steamer Osborne in 1882 was the fourth boat in a month done in by the steel-hulled passenger liner Alberta, which it liked to go faster than it should. I'm guessing the driver did. I doubt the boat was doing it. Even in thick fog, the boat would go faster than it should, and it plowed over 4 boats in a month.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not cool.
No.
Let's see here. In 1909, the Isaac M. Scott struck the John B. Cowles, which with 14 lives lost and licenses of both pilots suspended. So apparently some people did live. The worst loss of life by collision came in 1920 when the Willis King and the Superior City confused passing signals and hit each other with a loss of 29 lives.
Mm-hmm.
But the storms, you know, that leaves it up to, you know, fate and really good, you know, being a really good captain to get through it. But some of the stuff is just, you know, confusion and, you know, not, I guess, behaving properly on some of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, there's all kinds of just really cool stuff. You know, and then there's all these. And then, of course, each lake, I mean, really, talk about sea serpents and lake monsters. Almost every lake has stories of one, you know, not just Lake Superior. Lake Ontario has one too. They say that Lake Ontario serpent is one of the most sighted lake monsters in Canada, with legends cropping up across various cultures and time periods. The Seneca spoke of, I have no idea how to pronounce this, an enormous hydra snake that could breathe fire like a dragon and fly like a bird. Near Kingston, Ontario, folklore tells of Kingstie, a famous, if somewhat unimaginatively named, beast around 30 feet long with short legs and a tail, and his first sighting was reported in 1881 by passengers aboard the Gypsy. The creature is so well known it was the subject of a massive hoax in 1934. How about that? Lake Erie has Bessie, apparently. She sinks a sailboat. Here's like a news story. Says that she's a Canadian cousin of Scotland's Loch Ness monster, Nessie. All because she's named Nessie, I'm guessing. The first recorded account of Bessie was in 1793. And sightings have only become more common in the past few decades. She is said to be a long, snake-like creature, anywhere from 16 to 60. Well, okay, that's quite a variance there. Descriptions of Bessie. Well, she can be anywhere from 16 to 60 feet long.
That doesn't even make sense.
Well, right? I mean, you know, maybe 16 to 20.
60?
Right? Yes. Descriptions of Bessie vary quite a bit, from descriptions of a dog-like head to fins to human-like arms. Its color has been reported as gray, copper, or silver. Okay. Yeah. And then, of course, they talk about all the crazy fish up there, you know, like the Lake Sturgeon.
Yeah. Well, that's real.
Yes. Creepy. Yes. Yes.
Some but yeah, are all huge. Kinds I can of see stuff. Where they'd be mistaken for a lake or a lake monster.
Yep.
They're huge.
Yeah. And you know, another thing, Karen's saying, yeah, maybe they're babies. Well, yeah, there have to be breeding populations, right? There's not just one. We've talked about that with Katie, you know, from the Champ, Lake Champ.
Right.
So there has to be breeding populations out there, but or they're interdimensional beasts, right? Just like Sasquatch and other things that we see. Yeah, it's cool. I'd like to see one for sure. It's like Peppy, you know? We haven't seen her either. But we sure know a lot of people who have. Probably not just one. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. I can't use the Bessie, though. That's like you're stealing someone else's name. I'm looking at the stuff, too, and I'm like, well, you can't take Bessie, right? Well, no, Bessie. I'm thinking Nessie. Duh. Okay.
Mm-hmm. You know, and then they're talking about all these other lighthouses that are haunted, too, like the Marquette Harbor Lighthouse and Marquette. Mm-hmm. Well, Marquette is kind of a weird little place. Have you been there?
Mm-mm.
It has a very different feel. Kat, you're on board here. Have you been? What do you think about Marquette? I think it's kind of a very different town. It's got a real different feel. So I can see where there's probably a lot of spirits up there, because I was only there once and I was very young. But even at that age, I thought this is kind of a strange place. It has a weird, really weird vibe. But, you know, this talks about most look at the Marquette Harbor and its lighthouse and see the beauty of the lake. But there was a worker at the Marquette Maritime Museum named Taylor Adams, and she was the daughter of a former Coast Guard station chief. And she sees a spookier apparition. She witnesses a small ghost of a girl on an upper floor of the lighthouse. Standing in broad daylight, this ghostly figure is seen staring out the upper floor window, peering out at the horizon of Lake Superior. It has been reported that the girl prefers catching a glimpse of the horizon when Lake Superior is calm and the winds of the lake stir up the sounds of the souls of her long-lost mother and father. That's why she likes it still, because when the winds come in, she hears her long-lost mom and dad proving too much to be. That's interesting. That's cool. Mm. And, you know, lighthouses, a lot of lighthouses, they say, are haunted, you know, so... I haven't heard anything about Split Rock Lighthouse, though.
Have you? I haven't investigated it. Yeah, I think, I mean, because people lived in them at one point.
There's still somebody who lives there. Yeah.
Structure attached to most of them. I think if they didn't live in it, they lived next to it right there. So, and that was your thing. And a lot of lighthouses were way out, away from people. So that was your life, you know, is lighthouse. And I mean, some lighthouses are on islands too, which would probably make it even more challenging. But I would imagine people, that's a pretty important role, especially back in the day. That was your life and you'd be pretty attached to it. So why wouldn't it be haunted, right?
Well, and the old light, remember the old lighthouses had the kerosene lights. So they had, that was kind of a really big job because they had to keep them going.
Dangerous.
Fascinating, actually. You know, we had a lot of, it was, it was a very important and big, big job.
There's South Manitou Island. I don't know if I'm saying that right. Michigan seems to have a lot of haunted lighthouses. Just saying, Kat, you check them out while you're traveling around. Let's see, you're in the mid 1800s, South Manitou Island, if I'm saying that correctly. Mm-hmm. Manitou Island was a popular stopping point for ships traveling through the Straits of Mackinac. Okay. So the South Manitou Island Lighthouse was constructed. Life on a remote island for the lightkeepers required semi-frequent trips to the mainland to gather supplies. One fateful day in 1878, the first lightkeeper, Aaron Sheridan, his wife Julia, and he made the journey on a small fishing boat with their infant son. Upon return, the boat capsized and they all drowned. Over the years, echoing voices, unexplained noises, and the sounds of footsteps believed to belong to the Sheridans have been reported at their lighthouse.
Yeah.
Oh, sad.
Yeah, that's, for sure. And, you know, there's a lot of other mysteries in the Great Lakes. You know, was it last year or the year before? So we all talk about Oak Island. Well, they had this show on called the Civil War Gold, where there's the story of some Civil War gold found its way up to Lake Michigan, and it was actually in two railroad cars it was on a ferry, and they were pushed off. So they feel like these railroad cars and all of this Civil War gold is still at the bottom of Lake Michigan. And I can't remember exactly where in Michigan. It's on Lake Michigan, and I can't remember the town. Close to Traverse City, I think, south of Traverse City somewhere. But fascinating stuff. So, I mean, there's all kinds of that stuff, too.
Yeah, I wonder how many treasures are down there.
Huh?
You know, I wonder how many treasures are down there.
Oh, I know. Right? Just like in the oceans, you know, they talk about the shipwrecks, and, you know, they're going to find all the pirate gold and all that kind of stuff. And
well, because I would imagine people were, you know, especially if they were pirates, you know, taking treasures from someone else and scooting through the Great Lakes to get inland to go hide them or bury them somewhere. I would imagine that there's some cool treasures down there somewhere, or legit stuff. I'm not just saying it's only pirates, but legit treasures as well down there, or, you know, but the undocumented stuff, because there's, you know, people that steal things.
And, yes.
you know, then they try and get away, and then here come the three sisters taking them down.
Mm-hmm.
Karma.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, for sure. But yeah, so I don't know. I hope those guys find it, because it was a good show, and I thought there would be a third season, but I haven't seen that on.
How long ago was it on?
It was on in 2019, and I thought they said the third. Yes, yeah, so, no, it's recent, and they said the Lagina brothers from Oak Island actually were helping them, right? So they were giving them, you know. Marty, I think, is the oil man of the two. He's the one with all the money, and I think he was helping them with expenses, you know. So he helped them rent the big boats and the underwater gear and stuff. Mm. But they went down to Georgia because that's where it all started, you know. And then it came north and followed the trail and the historical stuff. And they, of course, they were just getting out there and finding some cool stuff. And then the weather goes bad. Right. So then they have to go in, and it's too late in the season to go out again. So then it kind of leaves you on the edge of your chair thinking, OK, what's going to happen next season? And then hasn't been on. But yeah, cool. They did find some stuff. I mean, they found a couple of things that looked like maybe railroad cars, you know, cargo things. But, you know, then it was too late in the year and weather was bad and they just couldn't do it. So, oh, you know. One of those things. But yeah, cool. So, and then these underwater structures, I just think that is so amazing. It's like that those pyramids that we talked about, or those rocks. What was that? I didn't find that this time, but when we were on the paranormal smorgasbord that time, we talked about that. You know, it was like
Stonehenge.
Remember that rock that was in Lake Michigan too?
Oh, yeah. I can't remember now.
Funny that one didn't pop up here because it talks about all these other things. But
I know we had talked about a Stonehenge that was in, I think it was underwater in Lake Michigan, wasn't it?
Yes. Yes. So it was like this other camp thing that they found on this land bridge up in Lake Huron. Yeah. I mean, there's crazy stuff. Last ancient civilization of Michigan built structures twice as old as Egyptian pyramids. Okay.
Twice as old?
Twice as old. Okay, it all started when U.S. radar suddenly detected an odd structure at the bottom of Lake Huron. First piece of the puzzle that led to a 9,000-year-old discovery. So that's that land bridge that we talked about that they feel is a... It said it's a 9,000-year-old limestone structure comprised of two parallel lines of stones that led to a cul-de-sac lined with natural cobble. Several signs that point to existence of an submerged hunting complex that is more than twice as old as Stonehenge and the Great Pyramids of Egypt. Wow.
Wow.
So 9,000 years, right? I was thinking 900 years for something, but 9,000, that's a lot. 4 millennia.
Well, yeah, if it's older than Egyptian and all that, that's old. Oh, yeah. A 9,000-year-old caribou hunting drive lane is what I'm seeing here in this article. Caribou hunting drive lane under Lake Huron.
Yeah, that's the one.
Wow. 9,000 years old. So
I know.
How do they know? Well, I get how they can tell how old something is, but could it have been something that was natural and has just been there a long time? How do they know it was built? I guess they can tell because of what's around.
Yeah.
It doesn't match up.
Yeah.
They said the main feature called Drop 45 is the most complex hunting structure found to date beneath the Great Lakes. Constructed on level limestone bedrock, the stone lane is comprised of two parallel lines of stones leading towards a cul-de-sac formed by natural cobble pavement.
Mm-hmm.
Three circular hunting blinds are built into the stone lines with additional stone alignments that have been served as blinds and obstructions for corralling caribou.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's cool.
Isn't that cool? That is very cool. That is very cool.
So 9,000 years ago, there wasn't water there.
No. And there were
people here.
At least
all the time.
Yeah. And there were, you know, people here that did that, that built that, you know, so that's just amazing. I know on the chat room, they're talking about underwater, you know, salvage crews and stuff. And, You know, the problem with that is that the governments take so much, or they'll suddenly, after you spend like millions of dollars, these businesses pay to do this, then mm-hmm. the government might say, well, you have to stop now, and too bad, you know? It'd be fun to do, but wow, the amount of money you have to do it is ridiculous.
Yeah, which is why not a lot of people do it.
Right, right.
You know?
It just costs so much. It's so much money, and you could lose it just at the drop of a hat. England, now from what I've heard, is that England has a great law that if you discover something there, you get 50%. So, and you get 50%, and what happens is the English government pays you that 50%, but then what you find will be displayed in a museum. So it's a win-win situation, right? So you get paid for what you've done, yet everybody in the world gets to see it if they want to, because it's cool. You know, it's right. historical.
But you have to have the money in the beginning to do it in the first
yes.
place.
Yes.
So it's still
absolutely.
It's absolutely. Still not for everybody.
Oh no, it isn't. But how exciting is it to find? I mean, like Oak Island.
That would
can
be
you
cool.
imagine how much money those brothers have put into trying to find the treasure? Oh, but really, it's the story. It's the story, and both of them say that. You know, it's not so much right. the treasure; it's all of these underlying things they're finding in the story. And how are they ever going to puzzle it all together? It's just so fascinating. I think.
Well, I mean. They're people that like history and puzzles,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
I get that because, you know,
yeah.
it's like when you get on something, you want to figure it out, and this
Absolutely.
Is a really, really big puzzle.
Yeah.
And Sherry in the chat room was saying, yeah, every, you know, previous age has been covered up. You mm-hmm. know, it's, you know, when there's a gap of people or the people did it, you know, you think of in Egyptian lifestyle, they recarve over, you know, what has been carved into different things to put a new, you know, king or emperor or whatever you call it. You know, they
mm-hmm.
carve or they just chip it off so that it
yes.
takes that history away.
Yeah.
And then they put something new up. And so, you know, things get just covered up and hidden, or people hide it intending to come back to it and then they
mm-hmm.
die or whatever. And it's just, it's interesting. You know, it's a big puzzle. It's a big mystery.
It's fun.
That's
You know, I'm just an avid watcher of the Brothers Lena. I just think it's a fascinating show. And they have a new one out now called the Beyond Oak Island. So they do other mysteries too, you know, and they don't really go to look for them, but they talk about it. And then they talk to people who have. So yeah, it's cool. I love it. You know, history was my major in college, so I'm kind of a history buff. But before, it is 8:57, so we only have 3 minutes left. So, of course, we have to plug our sibling show, The Calling, which is on
yes.
tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. And tomorrow night, they're going to be talking about tales of near-death experiences. And their guest is the newest member of Supernatural Investigators of Minnesota, Caitlin McAtee. Tenge. Okay, I know I butchered that. I'm sorry, Caitlin, if you're listening. Or Jerry, I know you are. But anyway, so it's the newest member of SIM. Caitlin is going to be on, and it'll be a fabulous show. So listen in, everyone.
Awesome. That's a good topic.
Yeah, absolutely.
We should do that sometime.
So,
but very
wow,
far away from their show, so we're not copying it. But that's a good topic, you guys.
It is a good topic. It is a great topic. Have we done near-death experiences?
I don't think so. That's what I'm thinking about. I'm like, oh, that's a good topic.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll have to do it, you know, 6 months from now, so everybody's
credit
forgotten
to,
the show.
To Jerry and his team. Yeah, we'll give credit to the topic for you guys.
And Karen is thinking dragons would be a great subject for a show. I love that idea. That's a fun show.
She said dragons, and then someone else in the chat room said river ghosts. So I thought, yeah, those are good ones. Cool. We'll have to do those too.
Yeah, I like that. Oh, that's a good one. Okay, well, I guess we have a couple minutes left. Well, I was thinking it's time to go. I thought I heard some music, but maybe not.
We have music.
Do we?
Yeah.
So maybe it's time to go. Oh my gosh. Well, this has been a great show. Thanks everyone for, you know, typing in, you know, giving us your ideas and talking with us tonight, because it was fun. It was fun to look up all these wild things about the Great Lakes, wasn't it?
It was awesome. And thanks everybody for listening. and chatting, and everybody tuning in, Para-X Radio Network, thank you so much for hosting us, and Sarge, the most amazing producer on the planet, thank you for backing
us. Absolutely. And if there's, if we have the troops listening, thank you for your service. Please be safe. Tune in again. And everyone have a great week. We'll be back next week.
See you next week, everybody.